Blog Talk Radio.
Five Lincoln 103, five Lincoln 102, Lincoln 103 and 102.
5-8-2-4-1 parking circuit, section 1 boy.
Henry 8, Henry 9, respond to gate 437 Bravo for your dignitary detail. 3K911, I'm attended 400 lower level near Carousel 4, black bag. GTA in progress, 401 parking structure, section 4 boy.
Responding to 401 parking structure, section 1 boy.
415 passenger onboard aircraft.
Control 2 Franklin and Rock.
484 suspect, female, Hispanic, 28 years of age. Blue jeans, no further.
Control, high freight 401 is a route.
Well, good evening and welcome to another great edition of the Private Officer Talk Radio Network. We're glad that you've joined us tonight, this Monday evening, February the 7th, 2011. That's right, it's Monday. We're a little off on our schedule. Blame that on the Super Bowl. We decided probably it would be best for us, if we delayed the show. Many people, in fact, according to the media, the most people ever watched the Super Bowl this year. So here we are, Monday night, and we're glad that you're with us. I'm Rick McCann, founder and CEO of Private Officer International, an international security and police organization. We've got great show lined up tonight, as we always do. A lot to talk about. We'll be talking later on in the show about the inner workings of a private security agency. Of course, we can't give you all the details. We don't have the time, but we will explain pretty much overall how a security company works. How they make profit, how they bid, what their expenses are, so that you have a better idea of how the companies work and why they don't pay more money. And we'll be talking about that coming up in just a little bit. As always, when we're on the air or afterwards, when you're listening to us on demand, you can email us at radio@privateofficer.com. radio@privateofficer.com. You can also submit your news, training events, or any other happenings that you might be having in your area to us at radio@privateofficer.com, and we will be glad to make that known to our listeners here and worldwide. You know, we're really thankful, speaking about worldwide, we're really thankful because each week we continue to increase our listenership, not only here locally, but worldwide. People from all around the world listening, and it's just really been kind of amazing, actually, as we watch the stats each week grow, and we look at where our listeners are coming from, and we look at all the other things. It's really amazing to see people finding the show, listening to the show, recommending the show, and liking the show. So we're very, very happy for that. As always, we tell you every week that you can follow us on the web, contact us on our main website, privateofficer.com. Right there on the homepage is where all the links are to these following sites. You can listen to our radio program just by going to our main homepage. You can also follow us at Facebook/PrivateOfficer.com, Twitter/PrivateOfficer. Our breaking news can be found at PrivateOfficerNews.wordpress.com. And, of course, you can join us on our own personal forums at PrivateOfficer.ning.com. And you can get to all of those places right from our homepage at www.privateofficer.com. We kicked off February 1st, officially, the first training initiative of Private Officer International, the 2011 Private Security Training Initiative. If you have not signed up, if you have not pledged, we encourage you to go to the homepage after the show, and at the top of the page, you'll be able to click on and pledge that you will train. We're asking that you take at least 2 training modules above and beyond what your state requires for your certification, your guard card, or your license. The 2011 Private Officer Private Security Training Initiative is well on the way. We've listed more than a dozen sites where you can go and get free training online. It just takes a little bit of your time. Doesn't cost a nickel, doesn't cost a dime, doesn't cost a penny, just a little bit of your time. And you can get all sorts of training from colleges, universities, and other public safety organizations absolutely free. As we've been saying forever, all of the training, all of the cumulative training that you take, not only enhances your education and your skills, but it enhances your resume. It enhances when you're looking for a job. It makes you more valuable to the prospective employer. So I encourage you to participate. Also, Private Officer International is offering 1 free module as well. You can sign up for a number of modules that are listed there when you make your pledge, and we will give that to you free of charge as well. Just go to www.privateofficer.com, click at the top of the homepage where it says 2011 Training Initiative Pledge, and follow the instructions and the links and enroll today. We are looking to train 1,000 private security officers during this initiative. The training initiative last until the end of the year, so we have plenty of time. We're already 10% there. We've had great response, and we appreciate all of you who have taken this serious. We've had a number of you who have put the challenge in. Dan up in Connecticut, Tony in Florida, Billy in Oklahoma, and a number of others have said, why stop at 2 modules? Let's take 5 or 10, and one person who asked not to be identified quite yet because he has a challenge with me, one person has already taken 30 training modules. I decided that this is something that I would participate in as well. I don't need the certificates. I don't need any more enhancing of the resume, but I too have begun taking additional training, additional modules. I'm also working toward another degree, so this kind of helps with that as well. But it turns out to be fun. It turns out to be interesting. It doesn't take much time, and in a matter of an hour or two, you can knock out 4 or 5 modules, maybe 6 or 7. And, each one offers a certificate, and also it offers 1 to 3 hours of credit, so toward continuing education. So it's really a worthwhile project. And again, we invite you to get involved simply by going to www.privateofficer.com. Up at the top of the homepage, you will see a blue banner, and just click on there. Speaking of banners and advertising, Private Officer International, starting this month, will begin accepting limited advertising from various companies, vendors, and businesses across the country and around the world. We don't want to clutter up our website with a bunch of advertising, but we do believe that some advertising, which are industry-specific, will be good for our associates, our members, and will help us to reach out to more people. So if you are in a business, you have a training school, you have an insurance company, you have some type of business that you want to advertise, we have a substantial amount of hits on our website, and they're growing every month. You may want to contact us at adminassist@privateofficer.com for more information. Again, we will be taking banner and text advertising for the privateofficer.com website. And in addition, when you become an advertiser, we'll also include you in our email blast and as a sponsor on the radio show, all inclusive for one price. Again, email us for more information at adminassist@privateofficer.com. So, you know, we're moving up. We got a lot going on here, as you can see. You know, there's always something to tell you. We mentioned last week that we brought on several new countries, and again, I want to welcome the listeners and the members in St. Kitts Island in the West Indies, also Belgium, Germany, and Greece, and Japan, and thank all of you for joining the Private Officer International Association and being a listener to the program. Speaking of the on-site training, it has prompted us to look at disaster security. We really didn't have a whole lot in the area of disaster training security for private security personnel, which is very surprising because most of us involved with private officer are involved in public safety in one shape, form, fashion, or the other. And so we looked to see what training we had to offer security officers, and we are developing a new course called Intro to Disaster Security 1 and Disaster Security Response, and we will have that up and available shortly. So see, the benefit of doing some online training has already proved to be useful to us. It was an insight that we needed to do that because in any type of disaster, whether it be man-made or natural, there are three phases of response. There is the initial rescue phase where all of your public safety, police, fire, EMS go to help those who may be trapped or injured. There is a search and recovery phase after the scene or after the area is made safe. There is a phase to go out and search for victims and to recover those who were lost during the disaster, those who did not survive. And then there is a security or a secure phase where it goes into an operational mode. And so we'll be talking about how private security interacts in phase one and phase three. And in fact, we have a disaster response team. We've only activated it twice in the 7 years that Private Officer International has been around. However, we are looking to activate more often. So you may want to take this course, Intro to Disaster Security and Disaster Security Awareness. And we'll let you know when that becomes available. On the website, on the forums, actually, we have a couple of surveys going on. We'd like for you to participate. We'd like to know what you're using what services that you're using. If you're using our news, if you are reading our emails, if you're listening to our radio show, it helps us to tweak and fine-tune our services and products. And we'd like for you to go there after the show, of course, and just take a few moments to let us know which of those you use. I failed to mention also earlier when we were talking about the training initiative, if you complete two modules this year above and beyond what is required by your state, you'll receive a certificate, but you'll also be mentioned in a national press release that we will be sending out later this year. So, you know, you're going to be a winner, you know, all around. Just take the training. You'll educate yourself. You'll enhance your resume. You'll get some press time from it. And, you know, you will become better for it. Had an email just now. As I quickly read, Charlie's email says, yes, he asked if he's taken some training sometime in the last month or so and sends us certificates if that will count. As long as the training was not something that was already mandated by your state to get your guard card or your state license, yes, it will. Thanks for that email. Want to remind you that we have still a lot of work going on with the chapters. If you're interested, we have decided in the last 6 weeks or so not to slam open a bunch of chapters that won't work, but we're methodically and slowly opening one chapter at a time. If you're interested in getting some information, send us an email at adminassistatprivateofficer.com. And basically, we are very interested in continuing this process, but it just isn't going to happen as fast as we would like. But we are going to continue in that process. We have a lot of new segments that we've added to our website, and we are updating some more. And so I encourage you to go to our website frequently at privateofficer.com because it is our goal to be the best training resource on the web and also the best overall website for the private security and public safety industry. So be sure to be checking that out as well. We're building our online stream TV station even as we speak. And so we've got a lot of things going on. I mentioned last week, and as you notice, I'm moving right along because we have a lot of things to do here and a short time to get there, as always. But I mentioned last week that we are looking for people for a new advisory board. If you would like to be on the advisory board, this will give you an opportunity to put your two cents in, to tell us what you think we are doing right, what we could be doing better as an organization, and to brainstorm with us. Send us an email at adminassist@privateofficer.com if you would like to participate and be on the advisory board. Again, it's basically brainstorming and suggesting and thinking out things together so that we can build a bigger, better mousetrap for our organization. Again, just send us an email at adminassist@privateofficer.com if you would be interested. We're also looking for ambassadors for every part of the country and the world. If you would like to become an ambassador for Private Officer International, and we do have a list of a few people that we need to get back in touch with. They names came in during the holidays and we put that off, but we will be contacting you if you did already give us a heads up on that. But we are looking for ambassadors who would serve as the point man for the Private Officer International Association whenever a security officer is injured or killed in the line of duty. Also to be a liaison between law enforcement and POI, to be a spokesperson, and to kind of help us in the community, to be more known, to be more recognized, and to get the word out further. If you're interested, send us an email at adminassist@privateofficer.com. Do want to get over to the birthdays very quickly. Happy birthday to Wendell Hyatt in Russellville, Alabama. Stephen Fuller, he is 85 years old and still a security officer. And, well, Mr. Fuller, I sure hope that you are playing it safe and that you are very careful on the job. Happy birthday to you. Lanny Wolf, a friend of mine who is in the gospel music industry for many, many years. Happy birthday to you, my friend. Mickey Sanford, 45. He's in the British Columbia, Canada. Theodore Newton in Newcastle, Delaware, is 60. Stephen Buttermill is 49 years old, and he is in Hartford, Connecticut. And also Kevlin Parker in Jeffersonville, Illinois, and Dwayne Wells in California. Happy birthday to all of you. Also want to recognize Mark Hampton. Mark finished his Certified Asset Protection Professional 2 certificate. And we're very excited about the number of people who have inquired in the last few weeks about our certifications and our training, because I think it's one of the best online, and we're only going to improve that. In the email bags, Mark Gamble has become our latest lifetime member. He is out in Stockton, California. We often kid him and tell him he's in Compton, which is part of L.A., in the bad section. He says that Private Officer International rocks, and that's why he loves the company and the organization, and that's why he upgraded his membership to a lifetime member. Timothy Hampton is a security director, and he said he's glad to be a new member. He enjoys all of the training, the radio shows, and everything that we have to offer. Stanley Locust in Freeman, Kansas, says he loves what we're doing for the security industry. He listens to the show faithfully. Sonny in Georgia thanks us for all of the informative shows, the products, and he really likes everything that's going on. Also, Tim Baker loves the show. We'll be listening faithfully. Skip in Florida says he is excited about all of the new things Private Officer International is doing, and he can't wait for the conference and the other things coming up. Also, Betty has wrote in, and she says that she is excited about her submission into the book. That's correct. I haven't mentioned that in a while. Thanks for bringing that up. We are still taking submissions. You can become an instant author. We're looking for people to write 200-plus words of a situation, incident that you've been involved in your security career to be included in our Security in Motion book that we are compiling. And we will be taking some more submissions in the next month or so. We'll be closing that out probably in early spring. That will go to the publisher, and it will be sold at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and several other stores, and all the proceeds will go to the Officer Down Benevolent Services for Private Officer. But this is a great way for you to become an instant, a true instant author. Just submit 200 plus words to Private Officer International at adminassist@privateofficer.com. Just that simple. Doesn't take much at all. Want to go over quickly to the news. This may or may not be of interest to you, but the Bank of America agreed today to pay $410 million in a federal lawsuit alleging that the bank charged excessive overdraft fees. So if you are a Bank of America customer, although you may not personally recoup any money, this may be a victory for you because the fees, according to the federal court, was excessive. And because of their method of collecting them, actually was illegal. Just a little bit of tidbit news that we found today. In Sugar Creek Township, Ohio, police there arrested a police officer after loss prevention agents at Walmart found him and his wife shoplifting a large quantity of DVDs. Thousands of dollars worth of DVDs were recovered from police officer Joseph Purnell and his wife Ashley at the Walmart on Wilmington Pike in Sugar Creek Township, Ohio. Joseph Purnell is a West Carrollton police officer. Both of them have been arrested on felony charges and have been released for a court date. In Merida, California, a Riverside County man faces life in prison for shoplifting just $21 worth of merchandise from a Home Depot store. According to authorities, Scott Hove agreed in court that he did put some gloves and wire in the waistband of his pants. However, he dropped the merchandise as he exited the store. Of course he did, because he was being apprehended by security. The 44-year-old man faces 25 years to life under the California three-strike law. He's been in prison 7 times for burglary and selling drugs, and his case will be his prison term will be handed down this week. And like I said, he could face life in prison for the shoplifting, petty shoplifting. Braintree, Massachusetts, loss prevention agents at the Target store there say that they apprehended 3 overnight store workers. They were stealing merchandise. They were caught stealing iPod Touch, a number of them. All 3 were charged with larceny from a building, burglary, and larceny in a scheme. And they've been released pending their court hearing. In Florida, a Seminole Casino security officer was struck over the weekend by a drunk driver. Security officers were notified of a possible intoxicated person. When they went to investigate, they began talking to the subject, who was identified as Timothy Garza. He got into his vehicle and tried to drive off, striking the security officer as he accelerated. He has been arrested. Another drugstore robbery, this one in Port Charlotte, Florida. 19-year-old woman, Aubrey Tia Lynn Height, went into the CVS store there and demanded oxycodone. She said she had a gun. She was given 12 bottles of the drug, and she fled, but police caught up with her a short distance later. The 19-year-old faces felony armed robbery charges. Currently is being held without bond. In Nassau County, New York, over the weekend, police officer Michael Califano was struck and killed while inside of his vehicle investigating a traffic infraction. The officer was hit. His vehicle was struck by a large box truck on the LI Express, the Long Island Expressway, and the officer was killed. Officer Califano had been a police officer for 12 years. In Utica, New York, a group of people accused of being part of a shoplifting gang stealing clothing and electronic items have been indicted on 16 criminal charges, including endangering the welfare of a child, Harlan McBean, Billy Goode, and Tayanda Durham all are charged with felony larceny, felony criminal possession of stolen property, possession of anti-security items, and endangering the welfare of a child. Well, I told you a few minutes ago about a man in California who faces life in prison for stealing about $25 worth of merchandise because of the three-strike law. Another case this week in Vicksburg, Mississippi. Mississippi man stole a $1.28 can of food from the grocery store. He faces life in prison also because of the three-strike law there. He stole Vienna sausage, which police say was his third offense. Earl L. Scriven now faces life in prison for the theft of the $1.28 item. Here's a very interesting story. If you are in loss prevention, a Macy's employee in Daly City, California has been arrested. This is an employee of Macy's now, arrested for stealing $60,000 worth of makeup. Loss prevention caught the person leaving the store. Carlos Kakula was caught by loss prevention leaving the store with 90 tubes of lipstick valued at $1,300. He later admitted to stealing another $50,000 of cosmetics from one store and at least $20,000 from another Macy's stockroom. This is how they're doing it today, folks. They're not taking one or two items. Employees are taking shelves and stockrooms of stuff out of the door, and it's becoming really a problem. Warren, Ohio, seems like over the weekend a bouncer security officer was involved in a fight. The former nightclub security officer came in and caused a confrontation. During the fight, the ex-employee was killed by the current security bouncer. Police are investigating, and he could face charges. Montgomery, Alabama, a security officer involved in a confrontation while working at a gas station shot and killed a man on Thursday night. The security officer was also an off-duty Sheriff's Department employee. We're not sure if he's a reserve or a full-time officer because the Montgomery County Sheriff's Office is not releasing any further details about this. Security officer was shot five times during an attempted robbery in East St. Louis, Illinois. 23-year-old security officer, who police are not identifying, was shot five times by a group of people trying to rob him as he sat in his vehicle on his post at the Top Metal Buyers on Walnut Avenue. Police say the security officer was employed by KLM Security. He's in critical but stable condition at this time. According to police, the men tried to rob the security officer while he was sitting in his vehicle on the post. He tried to drive away. Several people opened fire, shooting him five times. My goodness. That is the news for this week. Now, we're going to move on to our training tonight. Very interesting segment. We hope that you will get something out of this. We were asked by a number of people in the past to do a little bit of an informative show about the inner workings of a contract security agency. And it just so happens that, you know, I got a little bit of experience, you know, in that field, you know, just a little bit, 35, 36, 37 years, something like that. But we're going to tell you a little bit about how private security companies do and do not work, why security pays so little, why there are so few benefits, and we're going to explore a little bit about the training issues as well. it's not that the private security industry doesn't want to pay more wages, doesn't want to offer more benefits. It's just the nature of the beast, and we're going to be talking about that. If you currently are employed in the contract security industry, then you already know that it's one of the fastest growing businesses in the world, not just in the U.S., but in the world. India, of all places, is experiencing a huge demand for private security forces, and as is other countries. Security is one of the fastest growing businesses and has been for more than 20 years, long before the 9/11 disaster, and it will continue to be for quite some time for a number of reasons. Law enforcement continues to cut staff, budgets are being slashed, more and more people are security conscious, and so there's a huge opportunity for the private security contract industry. And, you know, I hope that this will somehow push contract security companies to be better, to have better training and better recruitment. And I hope that the laws will be a little bit stricter. Contract security basically is a very simple and easy type of business to operate and to understand. It does not take a rocket scientist to understand the inner workings of how to operate a security agency. It doesn't take a lot of equipment. You don't have to have a big factory with million-dollar pieces of equipment. You don't need to have 1,000 employees. You don't need to have a big assembly line. You don't need to stock a lot of product like you would if you were opening a store. You don't need to have a lot of inventory. In fact, in the private security business, it could be just you. You could open up a company with just you on the payroll. Contract security basically provides labor. It is a labor-intense type business. Little equipment is necessary. But labor is what you're selling. Labor for access control, mobile patrol, shoplifting detection, alarm response, you know, and the whole gamut of things that physical security officers do. We've discussed previously that there are three types of contract security these days. You have physical security, that's the bulk of security work, people doing guard work, patrol work, things of that nature. You have electronics, alarm service, surveillance, things like that. And then you have data and internet security. That's how the security industry is broken down. It's broken down into three categories. Tonight we're basically talking about the physical part of private security. It's a very labor-intense type of business, but it is an easy business to run as long as it's managed properly. Contract security can be rewarding, profitable, fun, and even educational. Really, you say, well, I manage a company, I own a company, and it's not much fun. There's not much profit, and I haven't had any education in this. Well, it all depends on how you look at things, and we'll be talking about that in this training tonight. Security does provide a very important link to local and national security, including homeland security, as well as it helps employees to cut down on losses from thefts. It helps employers to protect their business from burglaries and fires, detects, deters, and detains criminals. Private security is the link. It, you know, we've been saying this for years, private security has really become the true first responder. Contract security is a lot like other companies. So if you're listening to me tonight and you're saying, well, you know, I don't own a private security business. I'm not into guard service. I have a lawn care service. I have a florist business. I plow parking lots in the wintertime. I have a labor service where we supply temporary labor. All of those companies, with the exception of the florist, really basically is structured in the same manner as private security. Private security is all about supply and demand of labor. We're not selling widgets. We're not selling trinkets. We're not selling tangible items or products in the physical security category of security. We're providing service bodies. You've heard people say, well, they don't care as long as they have a body. Sometimes that's true, unfortunately. It depends on the type of client, type of duties the security person will be performing. Contract security or labor companies are also extremely difficult because of the high turnover rate, the client restrictions on income, benefits, the hours and services they require, and also the profit margins are low. Whoa. Wait a minute. You just said that it was profitable business. It was a fun business. Well, that's true. And we will get into that. But there are some built-in issues with this industry. And like I said, part of it is the high turnover rate, the restrictions based on the client needs, demands, wants, and also the profit margin is low. Because this is a supply and demand type business, it is a business based on what the market can bear. And we will talk about that as we talk about the contracts and the revenue. But let's talk about a startup operation. Have you ever wanted to start your own business? Have you ever thought about owning your own security company? Well, let's go by the numbers. I want to give you a little insight, not only what it takes to start a security company, but how much it costs to maintain one. That may open your eyes just a little bit as to why private security is paid what they are, why the security industry doesn't pay more. But let's go through a sample. A startup operation, and we're going to base this in Georgia, but it could be based any place in the 50 states. But let's say you're going to open up a private security agency in Atlanta, Georgia. First of all, you would have to make application to the Georgia Board of Private Detective and Security Agencies. And by the way, this procedure is exactly the same in about 38 states, actually. There's about 12 states that don't require state license. The procedure would be done exactly the same if you were in Texas, Oklahoma, California, New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, so on and so forth. You would make application to the licensing board in your state. Now, here in the Atlanta metro area, in Georgia, actually, the initial application fee for a security detective agency is $800. That's just the piece of paper that you send in to apply for your license. There's also a $70 per employee application fee. $70. Now, that doesn't sound like a whole lot of money, when there's just one or two employees. But what if your company had 1,000 employees? $70 times 1,000 employees, that's $70,000, right? We know security is a high turnover business. Every time that a new employee is hired in Georgia, the application fee to the state is $70. Okay, let's say that you start with an initial 50 employees at $70. That's $3,500. So your state license application and your registration of 50 employees together is $4,200. That's just the paperwork to the state to get you started. There is additional fees to have instructors. There are additional fees for weapons. There are additional fees required by the state for a surety bond. In Georgia, they require a $25,000 surety bond, which could run you another $1,000, $1,200 or more. There are training requirements. Now, we're not going to go into all of the requirements of this particular state or others, but when we talk about training, we're talking about expenditures of cash that we have to pay security people before we even begin our business, before we even begin to make any income at all. We've already put out $7,000. Training requirements. In most states, the average fee to train a security person required by law in their state, and this is the average, is about $300 per man. That's classroom training, whether it be 12, 16, or 18, 24 hours. It may be gun range training. Some states require that there's additional classroom for pepper spray, impact weapons, handcuffing, taser, all of that. So we initially in our startup company began with 50 employees, $300 per 50 employees. You have another $15,000. Right now we're up to $24,000 and we haven't even begun our business. Some of the other costs associated before you even open the doors is liability insurance. Fly-by-night companies don't have liability insurance for the most part. Small mom-and-pops initially get the insurance because it's required for their license, but they normally stop making, or many companies stop making premium payments, and therefore their liability is dropped. Well, what is liability insurance? Liability insurance covers you from any type of wrongdoings, false arrests, or thefts that your employees may be responsible for. If you were to get sued because they damaged something, if you were to be sued because they detained someone or arrested someone wrongfully, and the person sues you, the GL, the General Liability Insurance, would cover that in most cases. Not all cases. And, you know, they also do their due diligence. They do their investigations. They determine whether or not it was contributory, whether or not your company, your employee contributed to the loss, to the actions. And they pay maybe some, maybe all, maybe none of the claim. But liability insurance in most states that require a state license is between $1 and $5 million. So if you, for instance, have an armed security agency, you are in the higher risk category. So you have a $3 million policy, your premium could be $8,000 a year. And these are reoccurring operational costs that a private security company has. Okay, here are some other real hardline expenses that are reoccurring that you are probably not aware of. Besides liability insurance, every state, except for a few, require that the employer, regardless of what type of business you have, whether you have a lawn care business, a florist shop, a painting company, or a security guard service, requires that you have workers' compensation insurance. Workers' compensation insurance is based on your payroll, how much money you're paying, and they figure your premium based on a percentage of your payroll. Workers' comp is mandatory in most states because it covers you, the employee, if you're injured on the job. Not if you're driving to work, not if you've left work, not if you fell across the street on your lunch hour, but it does pay you. It does cover your medical expenses and part of your wages if you should be injured or disabled while on the job. So it's something good to have. Without the workers' compensation insurance, if you were to be injured, you'd have to sue your employer and hope that if you did get a judgment, that you would be able to recover the funds, which would be difficult. But each employer, legitimate employer, pays a certain percentage each month to the workers' compensation insurance, and you know, it's a lot of money. If you have 50 or 100 or 1,000 employees, a percentage of your income is going to the insurance premium. And the thing about insurance, the good, the bad, and the ugly, is that most people, whether it be health insurance, auto insurance, homeowners insurance, liability insurance, workers' comp insurance, most people don't use it. They have very few occasions, very few incidents, very few claims, but they keep paying the premium month after month after month, year after year after year, just in case something does happen and you have to file a claim. Same thing with the workers' compensation. Employers pay that faithfully. It comes out of the bottom line. It's part of the overall cost of doing business, but they may never reap the benefits of having that insurance. Most states require that you have auto insurance. So if you have insurance on your vehicle and you're a safe driver, you probably have not filed a claim or very few claims. Look at all the money that you spent just on your auto insurance. How about your homeowner's insurance? Never file a claim, but look at the premiums that you've paid over the years. Well, imagine a security agency having to pay workers' compensation, general liability, and auto insurance. It's extremely expensive, and that's why smaller companies, fly-by-nights, don't continue their premiums because it's extremely costly. Now, here's another expense that you may not be aware of. And preparing for the show, I asked a couple of different security company owners to come on and speak, and for some reason they didn't want to. We're not telling any trade secrets. We're not giving any information, insider information, that they wouldn't normally be able to get a hold of, so I'm not sure why the hesitance. I had a security manager tell me he didn't need to inform anyone how a company operates, and he didn't need to learn anything because he knew it all. And when I posed a few questions to him, he had no idea. He didn't know anything about Social Security payments. He didn't know anything how workers' compensation premiums worked based on payroll. He didn't know half of what he thought he knew. Maybe that's why, as an employee of a security company, you have such a hard time communicating with your supervisors and managers, because a lot of times people think they know it all just because they have a couple of years' experience or because they've been put into a position, but they don't know it. They don't. They don't have the experience. But one of the other payments, a couple of other payments that security companies have to make, they have to pay into the Social Security tax fund. Every employee that they have on payroll, they withhold a percentage of your income for Social Security tax, and they pay into the Social Security tax. Did you know that? If your company has 1,000 employees, they pay in a percentage to that employee's Social Security fund. They also pay unemployment tax. That's why if you've ever been laid off, fired, or quit, and you apply for unemployment, many times the employer will appeal. They'll be there to make sure that you don't get your unemployment benefit because they've paid into that. And if you got fired or you quit, they don't want you to benefit from their payments. These are all weekly, monthly, yearly, reoccurring expenses, not only with the startup company, but in maintaining a company that you may not have been aware of, that your company is having to pay every month, every quarter, every year. Some of the other obvious overheads that are reoccurring, as well as one-time expenditures, include administrative costs, secretaries, clerks, office staff, management, trainers, supervisors. They come from the bottom line, those salaries, those paychecks are not supported through client income. In other words, they can't bill a client for the secretary's hours. They can't bill a client for the trainer's hours. They can't bill the client for the operations manager's hours. All of those costs, operating staff costs, administrative personnel, secretaries, office staff, management, trainers, supervisors, and so forth, all those salaries come from the bottom line. The bottom line. They're part of the overall inherent monthly, weekly, yearly cost of doing business. It's called operational expenditures, operational payroll, and it comes from the bottom line. Those people don't bring money in. They don't get billed out. So it has to come off the gross income of the office. Some of the other costs which are reoccurring, obviously, would be the office rent, the light bill, the phone, the long distance, the cell phones, the two-way radios, office supplies, uniforms, vehicle maintenance, vehicle purchases, gasoline, two-way radios. Look at all those expenses that have to be paid, and guess where that money comes from? Comes from gross revenue. If your company is making $100,000 a month, they have to pay all those operational costs, all those operational salaries, plus make payroll each week. There is very little profit margin each month for most security companies. but you can be profitable. I'll tell you about that in a few minutes. Some people have asked about contract bids. Why don't more companies become involved with contract bids? Why don't they get on the list? In order to be a contract bid or bidder or vendor for municipalities, states, or federal government, you have to get on the list, first of all. You have to put your name in. And basically what that does is it allows you to be notified when the entity is bidding out security service for a particular building or location, whether it be the parks or whether it be the courthouse. It gives you a chance to send in usually a sealed bid. The advantages and the disadvantages of becoming a vendor for municipal governments, states, or federal governments, there are advantages, pros and cons, just like everything else. The advantages, first of all, you know you're going to get paid. You're working for the city, the state, the federal government. They're going to pay you, unlike another client who you're not sure of, whether or not they're creditworthy, whether or not they have the income, the revenue, whether or not they're going to cancel you at any time. With a government contract, it's a pretty solid contract, and you know your check will get there. You just don't know when. The other pros of being a vendor, being on the contract bid list, is that usually if you have one or two contracts from the state or from the city or from the federal government, you become, you know, you provide good services and you become a chosen vendor for them, and you could basically run your security company based just on federal contracts. There are several large international security companies that do just that. They only service government contracts. Now the downside. The downside to bidding for municipal, state, or federal contracts is, in many cases, they're slow to pay. You may invoice them, and it may take them 90 or 120 days or longer to send you a check for the invoice months ago. So if you have 10 security officers on site, that means you are having to cover that payroll month after month, waiting on them to pay their bill. Unless you are substantially wealthy or have a substantial bankroll, you won't be able to do it as a small operation. The other downfall or negative about bidding is that they will, most of the time, take the lowest bidder. Well, why is that, you say? Lowest bidder doesn't mean that they're going to provide good service. They're probably going to provide lousy service. Maybe we're only talking 25 cents an hour less. Company ABC bid $15 and company FGH bid $14. And 25 cents, 75 cents an hour, big deal. Why not go with the higher paying one? Well, it may not look like much money when you initially look at it, but depending on the amount of the billable hours, it could be $5, $10, $15, even $100,000 difference based on a yearly basis. If you are going to be a provider of service for a state facility that has 10 security officers on shift around the clock, $0.75 an hour is going to add up substantially. If you are going to provide two security officers 24 hours a day, that's 48 billable hours per day, a client could save $20,000 going with a little lower bid. And so oftentimes they do go with a lower bid. Those are the pluses and the minuses of bidding for municipal, state, or federal contracts. It's a good thing if you can financially sustain yourself while you're waiting for them to pay. But if you're a small company, a startup business, or just a mom and pop, you're probably not going to survive with those type of contracts. You know, the other downside to this type of competition is that, you know, if you do take the contract, then the name, your name, the company name gets out as the low bidder, and regular clients may not look at you as a serious contender for a big contract that they have coming up. They may think that you have lesser quality people. They may think that you are only a body supplier when they, in fact, are looking for a quality security service. So there are pluses and minuses. But getting back to a couple other things, money. And tonight we're talking all about supply and demand, money. If in a private security contract service, we're talking always about billable hours, because that's how you make your money in this business. Now, a security contract at XYZ Warehouse pays $15 billable hourly rate. Now, that sounds pretty good. And that would be good if there was no overhead. If you had a one-man show or two men, you and your brother, you and your friend, operate the whole security company at 100 hours a week, billable hours, times $15 an hour, that's about $80,000 a year. Split it between both of you, you got $40,000. Not bad. Not great, but not bad. But the reality in this business, especially if you want to grow your business, is that you have to hire people. And in the contract security business, and if you're listening and you own a security company and I'm not correct, my figures are off, you can send me an email at radioprivateofficer.com, radioprivateofficer.com. But in my years of having a security agency, in my years of being in this business, and several of our other directors being involved in the contract industry, the overall cost of a contract security company, about 74 to 78% is labor, it's payroll. So if you're making $15 an hour, billable hours, the company is billing $15 an hour, XYZ Security is billing the warehouse $15 an hour, and they're paying $9 an hour, which is kind of high, but $9 an hour to the security officer for supplying the labor, that leaves $6 left. Well, that looks still like pretty good profit. And then we have to figure in all those things I told you about earlier, the unemployment tax, the Social Security tax, the general liability, the workers' comp insurance, the vehicle insurance, the office expenses, the overhead, the salaries for the secretary, the supervisor, the operations manager, et cetera, et cetera. A contract security company, when figuring what their billable rate is going to be, they have a structure. They have a table of costs. They figure all of these things in per hour. They break it all down to an hourly basis, and that's how they come up with their hourly rate. If I'm paying the security officer $9 an hour, and it costs me $4.18 overall operations per hour, that's $13.18. I'm going to have about $1.82 left. That's going to be gross profit, not net profit. Gross profit. Net profit is after every last thing has been paid. So now we're paying the security officer $9. We're billing $15. We have $6 left. We got to pay the unemployment tax, the Social Security tax, and all those other things. Now we have $1.15 to $1.60 possible profit left. So let's say we have $1.60 per hour profit, and this is gross profit left, and we're billing out 1,000 hours a week. At the end of the month, we have to look at what the net profit is. What's the difference between the gross profit and the net profit? Well, we may have other expenditures. We may have time and a half. People may be working overtime because we're shorthanded. So now let's say that you are the security officer making $9 an hour, and you are working 10, 15, 20 hours a week of overtime. Well, that's good for you because now your overtime rate is $13.50 an hour. That's a little bit better for any company. Great for you, stinks for the security company, because now $13.50 and their billable is only $15 an hour. Now they have $1.50 per hour to pay all those other expenses. So basically, the way that works is a security agency may not be making money from client one or client A, but he may be making profit from the next client. And kind of all balances out or washes out in the end, hopefully. But there's always other expenses to figure in. Benefits, holiday pay, insurance co-pays, you know, the vehicle breaks down and you need to get it fixed, that's not in the budget this month. Uniforms get torn up and you got to buy a stack of new uniforms, wasn't figuring on doing that this month either. There's always, always something when you own a business that comes up that you have to buy, you have to pay for, that was not included in your budget, whether it be, you know, you own a florist shop, a painting company, or whatever. Things happen. So after all of that is paid, now you look at what your net profit is going to be. Many people ask all the time, why do security companies not offer more training? We suggest this kind of training. We ask about that kind of training. And the bottom line is that it's very cost prohibitive in most cases. And I know that sounds like an excuse, but it is reality. In most cases, security agencies will not provide additional training beyond what the state requires because it comes out of the bottom line. The client will not pay for additional training. The security company cannot bill the client 100 hours or 50 hours for training. It would be nice if we could. It would be great if it would be a requirement of the contract. Now, in some major contracts, some contracts can be structured to include some operational costs, such as training. But in the majority of companies, in the majority of clients, in the majority of contracts, it's cost prohibitive. But let's just say, for instance, We have 50 security officers, and we're paying $10 per hour. And we decide we're going to hold 4 hours of training this Saturday. 50 times 10 times 4. I never took math too much in school. I wasn't good at algebra. Trig wasn't my thing. But multiplication I can handle. 50 times 10 times 4, you got a couple $1,000 that has to come from someplace to make that payroll, to pay those people for the training. The budget's already tight. It's been a lousy month. We've had a lot of extra out-of-pocket costs, and now I've got to come up with $2,000 to pay for additional training that they don't need. I'm not mandated to give them. It's not happening. It's cost prohibitive. That's basically why security companies will not think about additional training, because it is costly. They can't say, come in on your day off and we'll do training, because the law doesn't require that unless you sign a contract saying you voluntarily do that. It's not always that the company doesn't want to provide better wages, better benefits, better training. It's just the nature of the beast. Supply and demand. We are strictly controlled, the security industry, by the client. I spent a number of years trying to educate my clients through a number of avenues, showing them the difference between a professionally trained and just a body. Security officers are all alike to them. And again, depending on the type of post, depending on the requirements and the duties, sometimes just a body is all you need. They just want someone there at the factory to be a fire watch. Do a clock round once an hour, lock the doors, and make sure the place don't burn down or somebody doesn't steal it. Well, sometimes a body is all that's required. Somebody who has half a brain and can follow instructions and, you know, do the hourly round and lock the doors and everything's good. But as we've talked about over and over again, in the security industry, there are different levels of security. Not everyone is that level. We have security officers today that are protecting military installations, protecting all of our infrastructure, protecting our energy plants. We have security officers who are really police officers and they make arrests every day. We have commissioned police officers, security police officers. We have security officers who carry machine guns here in the U.S. We have security officers who do a lot of different types of security. They do require additional training. And those type of contracts usually will build in, will allow for additional training as part of the contract. It's structured into the contract. But in many cases, no additional training is allowed or paid for by the client. If you had a security company and you wanted to be top gun and you wanted to train your people to be the best of the best and you did it out of pocket every month, it would become very costly. And so we try to do it every 6 months. And we try to do a lot of on-site training. And this is something that you can do yourself. If you're working a site where there are more than one security officer, maybe you have two on post, three on post, get together once a month and do some situational training. Get together and go over how to enter a building after the alarm's gone off. Get together and begin to look at how you would respond to different situations. You can practice on your own. You can go online to any of these free training classes and take those. There are options for you if you really are serious about training. But as far as contract security companies offering intensive training, for the most part, 90% don't and will not, because it's cost prohibitive. And that's just the way it is. That's a fact of life. Well, I've offered my company to help them and that, blah, blah. I understand. But they're not going to do it because they can't afford it. It's cost prohibitive. And the client's not going to pay for it. Okay, well, earlier I said that a security company is both profitable and also has a low margin of profit. So that's kind of a conflict. So let me enlighten you on that. Private security companies operate just like a McDonald's. Ever go through the drive-thru at McDonald's and wonder how in the world can they afford to sell all this stuff for $1 menus? Come on. How much is it costing them to make it? Well, it may cost them a substantial amount of that dollar to produce the hamburger. By the time they buy the hamburger, by the time that they spend the money that's required for the labor, add the bun, the ketchup, the mustard, the onions, you know, they might be up to 70-80 cents. However, McDonald's operates on the quantity philosophy. The more they sell, the more they make. The profit margin may not be in the individual item, but collectively, at the end of the day, at the end of the month, there's profit in quantity. And so too, it's the same philosophy in the private security industry. If a security company is billing out 5,000 hours a week and they're making $1 per hour net profit times by 52 weeks in the year, they're making probably $250,000, $260,000 of profit a year. That's net profit after every single thing's been paid. Well, that's pretty good profit. And if that company is billing out even more hours or has multiple locations, now you have real profit generation. So XYZ security company has five offices. They're making $250,000 a year net profit. That's after everything is said and done, everything's paid. That's $1 million plus per year with five offices. Net profit. Of course, larger companies are making much, much more. The bigger the company, the more billable hours, the more hamburgers you sell, the more money you're going to make. Also, as you become bigger, you're able to buy things in quantity. You're able to get better discounts from your insurance companies, from uniform vendors, from other companies and suppliers. And so your cost and some operational costs actually goes down instead of goes up, because now you're a bigger guy, you're a bigger fish, and you're able to negotiate your price. So yes, there is a thin line of margin, really, for profitability for a contract security company, unless you have a lot of hours, billable hours, or you are a mom and pop with one, two, or three employees. There are a lot of startup and operational month-to-month, year-to-year costs associated with private security businesses that you may or may not have realized. Private security companies can only offer you, the employee, the amount of money that the client is willing to pay. Some areas are different than other areas. It's whatever the market will bear. Have you ever heard that before? Whatever the market will bear. And that's the same thing with whatever you're selling. You're selling widgets in New York, you may be able to make $20 per widget. You're selling widgets in Mississippi, you may be able to make $10 per widget. Different economical climate, different area will dictate what you can charge for your product or your service. California private security may charge $22 an hour minimum. Tennessee private security may charge $14 an hour minimum. Different areas charge different rates. It's whatever the market will bear. If you are in a situation where you're talking to someone about a special event, a concert, a festival, or an emergency service, you've been called in at midnight because someone broke into a store and they need you to sit there all overnight, now you're able to charge premium rates because this is a premium event. Instead of charging your routine $15 an hour, you may be able to charge $25 an hour. Again, it's what the market will bear at that time. The other thing that I need to point out is that we often have people ask, well, why do I get paid one amount at one location and another amount at another location? Well, some security companies will pay you one flat rate, and others will pay you based on what that client is paying. Some clients pay more, and some clients pay less, as we have discussed earlier. The private security industry really is becoming a different type of industry than it was 15, 20, 30 years ago. Things are getting better. Maybe not where you are, maybe not the employer that you're working for, maybe not in your eyes. But I've been around it a long time, and I do see, slowly, but for sure, there are some things happening. There are some changes coming about, which will make the private security industry a better place to work, a better business to own, and I think in the long run, provide a better product and service to our clients. Well, we're out of time tonight. I hope that that has explained a little bit about how the industry works, and I hope that I've answered some questions. As always, if you have any questions, just send us an email at radio@privateofficer.com. radio@privateofficer.com. That's all for this episode. Be sure to join us next week. Until then, be safe, God bless, and we'll see you again next week right here on the radio.